Hey, what's up? This is John Norris, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
Let's go out to eat and get some meat. Turkey and jam, macaroni and ham. Say, do you like steak? I can surely make. If you hear me now, sing it loud for me, crowd.
You're listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm back for another week of radio in Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today, just in time for Cinco de Mayo, I'm joined by Chef Sam Richman of the brand new Dumbo Brooklyn-based restaurant, Gran Electrica. Sam, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Sure, thanks for having me.
So for those listeners beyond New York City, what is Gran Electrica, and what are you guys serving up?
It's a new Mexican restaurant in Dumbo, as you said, and our goal is to try to take the delicious food that already exists in Mexico and not New Yorkify it very much, and look to the basics of what Mexican cuisine is, which generally starts with masa for tortillas and other antojitos, and take that really seriously. And so we're not trying to make very fancy food. Actually, we're trying to make really simple food, but to try to translate that whole cuisine from Mexico to New York takes a fair amount of work.
Sounds like it. You know, you guys are part of the fantastic crew from Colony Restaurant in Brooklyn as well. It's in Brooklyn Heights?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Atlantic Avenue.
Yeah. You know, a very beloved restaurant. And you know, beyond that, like, let's talk a little bit about you for a second. You know, you've worked in restaurants like The Fat Duck in London, Jean Georges, but I want to know, how did you get into cooking in the first place?
I just started doing it as a hobby, I guess, to make dinner once in college. I distinctly remember I was dating a girl who lived in a nice house, and it was more fun to spend time at her house, and we went and made dinner. And I was just sort of amazed that this idea of something I had in my head got translated into a plate and it tasted good, and the whole process was fun, and just kept doing it. And then I took it on as a very serious hobby and just kept reading more and paying attention to food. I guess I was a foodie.
Weren't you like a financial analyst for a while or something? Or an
economic consultant.
Yeah, that's right.
But before that, in high school, I did work briefly as a dishwasher in a restaurant. And it's not a job I liked, but I feel like a lot of people I come across had that too. So maybe somewhere there's some connection. People who work as a dishwasher at some point might become cooks.
I was a dishwasher at one point in high school, and I am not a cook, but that was a dirty time in my life. Okay, let's talk about the process that it took, because you guys opened in late March, and in preparation of creating this menu, you traveled to Mexico. And where did you go, and what were you eating? Tell me about it.
I went for the month of January to Mexico, and I flew in and out of Mexico City. And I was advised by a few people to spend the bulk of my time there, just because in a month isn't actually that long of an amount of time to try to absorb a cuisine as complex as Mexican food is. I had spent a little bit of time there before and had been doing a lot of homework, but Mexico City is a great place to efficiently eat the best food from around the country. And I also set up a really cool trail at an interesting restaurant there, so that was helpful. But I knew I didn't want to spend the entire time there, because it's a little bit like a game of telephone. It's much more interesting to me to see the food that I'm interested in cooking at the source. Plus, Mexico City, you know, what's cool to me about Mexico is the really clear link to the past, and seeing places that look nothing like the Western world, and Mexico City doesn't really offer that. So I was also excited to get out of there. And Oaxaca was the most interesting place, so that's where I went from Mexico City. And the lots of towns around Oaxaca, which are all really diverse, even though they're close to each other. And then I spent a little bit of time in Veracruz and Puebla, and then back to Mexico City, back to New York.
So what were some of the dishes that you ate there that were your favorite things that you ate and kind of opened your mind up further into Mexican cuisine, like further beyond your previous knowledge?
Some of the moles that I had in Oaxaca, tasting for the first time, the flavors are just so different from anything I've ever eaten in my life. And mole is such a misunderstood thing. I'm not sure I could even nail down a definition myself of what a mole is, but also, it's one of those things where in New York, everybody, if they've heard of it at all, associates with mole poblano. And in fact, there's hundreds and hundreds of moles, and some of them are, you know, couldn't be further from that dark, complex sauce. Some are really, really light. So that was great. And then just paying, you know, going with a focus on what is masa and where does it come from? And, you know, even just going to visit crappy tortillerias and really nice tortillerias. And so that, it was a really focused trip. There's a few things I wanted to accomplish. And so those were some of the more interesting things.
Were you staging in any kitchens or any like little dirty spoon spots or?
I worked for 2 days at a place in Mexico City called Nico's, which is a restaurant that, in its second generation of ownership. The chef's parents started it, and he's attempting to do not new Mexican food, very, very, very traditional Mexican food with the nicest ingredients he can find. And he's taking masa production really seriously. They have, as soon as you walk in the door, they've got jars of 15 different corn varieties that are all heirloom corns from around Mexico that change seasonally. And he changes the masa according to season and maybe even according to what dish he thinks it pairs best with. But he's just trying to do really nice renditions of traditional dishes and not putting much of a spin on it, not much of a Western spin. And I think it's a great service to Mexican food. And that was really incredible to see. And I definitely picked up a lot in my 2 days there.
Corn tortillas, pretty essential to Mexican cooking. And if a guy has 15 varietals of corn, I'd say it's a pretty particular thing. How would you describe the best tasting tortilla? Because you guys are making your own in the restaurant.
Our goals and what we're making have differed a little bit. As we, you know, we got a bunch of corns in to try to make our own tortillas. We bought a mill. The mill worked for about 2 hours for us, and I think is getting put on a freight, some sort of, what do you call this thing, trucks, to go back to Texas this afternoon. So hopefully we'll get a new one right now. And now we're working with Nixtamal and getting their masa, and also trying to work with her to maybe develop other masas. But yeah, we're making the tortillas ourselves from their masa. But so what should it taste like? Well, the nicest tortillas I think I had were in Oaxaca, and the tortillas are called blandas. They're made from a really, really soft white corn, and the tortillas themselves almost look like a flour tortilla. And I think they're prized aesthetically, but their flavor is fantastic, and their texture is fantastic too. They never dry out. If they're 3 days old, they're still soft, even if they're cold. And they're sort of stretchy a little bit, and they hold fillings, and they don't fall apart. But they don't have a really aggressive, assertive flavor. And some of the corns that we were trying tasted like cornflakes in a bad way. That's not what a tortilla should taste like. And also, when you nixtamalize corn, when you take corn and you cook it with calcium hydroxide or whatever alkaline you're using to make nixtamal, which is what masa, which is what tortillas are made out of, it brings out lots of other aromas. I was reading something by Dave Arnold that says some of the same flavor molecules or aromas as chestnut honey. So the aroma of masa is very different from the aroma of corn. And when it says, it's a really appetizing aroma when it's fresh off the griddle. You know, walking past that every morning when I get there, I always steal a tortilla from the ladies making one.
that just kind of made me think about salsa, because I feel like, you know, looking at Mexican cuisine, it's so regional. It's a giant country. It's like, it's so complex. You know, every region has something they're clearly amazing at, etc. But like, when you guys were creating this menu, salsa seems like such a key component. And, you know, what are you putting salsa on? How did you come up with different salsas? I mean, I feel like salsa is that accoutrement of the cuisine that I don't know if I necessarily totally know the appropriate things to put it on. Does that make sense?
Sure. And I think, you know, I'm definitely a little bit of a control freak in how I present dishes. So one thought occurred to me, you know, when I was thinking about food costs, oh, we're going to be throwing so much salsa out. We're going to be making all this salsa. Nobody's going to use it. And the other part is like, I'm going to make this food that I think is good and put salsa. I would love to dress it myself and give you what I think would be the best taco, the taco that I would eat myself. That's what I want to serve to you. But then I have to look at what do I like about Mexican food in Mexico and what do other people like about it, and stay true to the roots of the food, which is almost everything is al gusto, to taste. So what's cool, you know, sometimes you go to a taqueria and you might go there and you love it because there's six different varieties of really awesome salsa. And it's up to you to dress the dishes as you like them. So we try to do the same thing or as close to that as we can in a restaurant in New York. And basically we have four salsas that go out if you order any tacos or antojitos that salsas are appropriate for. On the other hand, if you order a mole verde that's not served with a salsa, it is as it should be. It has tortillas. You should be scooping it up and making like an awesome, you know, mole verde taco, or just using the tortilla to sop up the sauce, because the sauce is the dish. The same thing with the ribs and some of the other larger plates. So salsas don't go out with the ceviche or agua chili, but they do go out with tacos and other masa-based snacks, which basically aren't complete until you've squeezed lime juice over it and added salsa to taste. And, you know, I just have to take a breath, and if somebody wants to pour too much salsa over it, that's their choice, and hopefully they're happy.
Well, it's a big compliment to you if they're dunking something in salsa, because you made it too, so it tastes delicious. So, you know, cookbooks, Mexican cookbooks, we have, it's a pretty wide variety, but like, you know, are there any cookbooks out there for listeners you can recommend that are a great kind of like general Mexican cuisine cookbook beyond Rick Bayless?
There are two authors that I think are the best authors for English speakers, and those are Rick Bayless and Diana Kennedy. And Rick Bayless, apparently, I don't know much about him, but I think he actually studied with Diana Kennedy a little bit. Diana Kennedy is fascinating. She was the wife of an ambassador to Mexico from England, I think, and that fell in love with the culture and started collecting recipes from everywhere, like from her bus driver from one town to another. Didn't necessarily have to be. She just understood that cooking really is part of the culture down there, and almost everybody knows something about food. And so she just started recording recipes and recorded thousands and thousands of them. And she, I think, has a really deep understanding of Mexican food. So all of her cookbooks I would recommend.
Okay. We are going to take a super quick break, but stay tuned, because when we get back, we have more from Sam Richman of Gran Electrica. You're listening to You Look Hungry. Keep it locked.
Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market. Whether you are cooking for one or for a crowd, Fairway Market literally has everything you need for a fantastic meal. But if you don't feel like cooking, no worries, they cater. Check out fairwaymarket.com for more information, and be sure to check the new blog, On Our Plate, for weekly specials, health tips, and recipes.
If you're just tuning in, you are listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm still your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm joined today by Chef Sam Richman of the Brooklyn-based Mexican restaurant Gran Electrica. Before the break, we were talking about everything Mexican. And, you know, damn, like mole, what makes good mole, corn tortillas, Mexican cookbooks. I want to know what's on your menu right now.
Well, there's an assortment of tacos and then other antojitos, meaning little snacks, which are also masa-based, which might be a little more foreign to a North American audience. So those are a gordita, which is a little bit thicker, a little fat guy, it means, or a little fat girl.
Always hating on the girls. I don't get that.
It's feminine, gordita. And so it's a bit thicker dough than a tortilla, and there's some fat in there. And the air inside the dough, when it's fried quickly, pops up, so it creates a little pocket. And there's some chicharron crispy pork skin in that one. And there's a tlacoyo, which is sort of an oval-shaped masa disc that's filled with ricotta. And then there's some ceviches and other seafood marisco dishes. And then some larger plates like a pozole and the mole verde, a tortita of watercress, wild watercress, which is pretty common in Mexico as well. So that's sort of like a frittata, I guess, in sauce.
It seems like, I don't know, cilantro, things like that are fairly simple to grab around these parts. But for other, what are some of the ingredients that are actually difficult to source on the East Coast?
Well, there's loads of ingredients that I can't get my hands on at all unless I find somebody willing to ship me stuff from Mexico. Dried chilies, for example, there's only a tiny percentage of the stuff available in New York that you could get in Mexico. I'm sure that in San Diego and maybe Chicago and other and Texas, places that are either closer to Mexico or have a really strong presence of Mexicans and Mexican food might have an easier time. But there's places like Rancho Gordo in Napa that are specializing in Mexican beans and spices. And I think that all of this is getting easier for even, you know, the cookbooks I'm reading. One of the Rick Bayless's first books is talking about substitutes for chipotles because he couldn't source them in the 80s in Chicago. And now it's really simple. So yeah, there's a ton of stuff I can't get at all. And I just try to only cook things that I can find the ingredients for. I don't really want to make a lot of substitutes. So I try to pick the dishes wisely.
In New York, what are some of your favorite Mexican joints besides Gran Electrica? Any tortilla factories? Any little carts?
Well, Nixtamal's awesome. Not only are they making their own tortillas, but their tacos are really great. And other hole-in-the-wall places is where I usually really like to go. There's a place on Graham and I think just south of Scholes in Williamsburg, and I don't even know the name of it. They have one name on the menu and one name on the front door and a different name on the awning above the door. So I think it might be called New Mexico Place. And it's always empty, but they have really, really delicious antojitos, and their gordita might be better than mine. So,
ooh.
Yeah. But it's made, they use masaca, they cheat, and it's a really horrible ingredient. It's made from GMO corn, but ooh, it tastes good there.
Oh, masaca, that's the stuff you can get at the grocery store in that bag. That's,
yeah. What?
It's like masa flour.
It's masa flour. It's masa. It's, you've made masa, and then it gets dehydrated and ground to a flour. And it's basically ruining tortillas for the world. And in Mexico, it's a huge problem, too. Most of the tortillerias are using masaca. Maseca's got, you know, has got themselves involved with the Mexican government and is pushing heirloom corn growers and users of heirloom corn out of the market. And, you know, it's a real shame because it's something that should be preserved.
Are people using it in Mexico because it's quick and easy? Is that why?
It is quick and easy, yeah. It's compared to the process of making tortillas with corn. You just add water.
So these heirloom corn growers, I mean, are, how would you say diverse are the varietals of corn out there? Like, are most people growing a standard?
I can't comment on that. I'm not sure. I know that it's not horribly diverse in America, in North America, even though it was. And there's a few, you know, Cayuga Pure Organics in New York is starting to grow some heirloom corns, and Anson Mills is king of that. And there's other corn growers I have written down. I haven't even contacted. I haven't had time for that. But, you know, it's indigenous to the Americas. There used to be lots and lots of corn varieties, and it's something that is becoming more and more of a monoculture. I think everybody's sort of aware of that. And it's, you know, to make tortillas, you're not looking for a sweet corn. You want a really starchy corn, either a flint or a dent, or what the kinds of corns are called, which refers to the starch and protein content of the corn.
So Cinco de Mayo is happening on Saturday, and you guys are going to be unveiling your back patio area. Is that right?
Yep.
It's like a beautiful lush garden. Does it overlook the Brooklyn Bridge, or it's underneath the Brooklyn Bridge?
It's sort of underneath at an angle. It's a good view of the Brooklyn underbelly of the Brooklyn Bridge.
That's pretty epic. You're going to be swamped because all of New York will want to come and hang out. So what are you guys going to be making in the festivities?
We're going to be making a simplified version. I mean, dishes straight off of the menu we have now, but stuff that we can pull out, pull off for, you know, a lot of people. So some of the tacos that we have, carnitas, lengua, tongue, suadero, brisket, and like a mushroom stew. And some of the ceviches and seafood dishes, mariscos.
Are you going to have some tecate available?
There's tecate available now, and I'm sure it'll be available on Saturday as well.
Well, you have an amazing bar program, too. You've got horchata, aguas frescas, right? Mm-hmm. What types are you serving?
There's a jamaica. We had a cucumber and mint that's on from time to time, and that'll definitely change with the seasons as well. The cocktails is not really my world, so
you've got some good mezcal. I had some the last time I came to the restaurant. It was very, very good, so I was impressed. And it's a beautiful bar. I kept just wanting to become like a woodworker so that I could copy it and put it in my house. Is that weird? I don't know.
It was a nice bar.
So, you know, you used to be the host of a very popular supper club in Brooklyn. Can I say the name?
Sure.
Dinners at 525. Did I get that right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you were cooking these dinners, how did it come about and what were you cooking? And can you talk a little bit about the experience of like planning a menu in your house for strangers and how that's helped your cooking today?
It came about because I had been working in restaurants for a while and needed a break and really wanted to get back to cooking what I wanted to cook and not what I was told to cook. And I also wanted to work on and develop my own recipe. So it sort of started as more of a workshop for me. I just wanted people to give feedback. And then I turned it into a job because I didn't want to have another job. And I thought I could make it sustainable, which it was for a while. I decided to cook what I wanted to cook, which was generally ingredient driven. I would go to the market and something would be appealing, and then I might work on that for a while. And a menu might be the best few dishes that I had done on the last few menus and, you know, something I was working on currently.
What were you making? Or how would you build a menu every night? Would it be like a protein, or what was your inspiration? Were you more interested in a cuisine or like a ingredient?
No, not interested in a cuisine at all. Definitely ingredient driven. And when I could be, you know, basically every month except from December through March when there's not much growing, it was produce driven. I like going to the farmer's market a lot, and that was the basis for these things. And especially, I think, it's what I like to eat the most. and I think they're the most interesting things to cook, vegetables. So that was basically the springboard, the inspiration for most of the dishes.
Would you say it's helped your cooking in terms of improvisation or, I don't know?
Well, it wasn't really that improvised. I would work on the dishes quite a bit before they went on the menu. I think I learned to be pretty methodical in developing dishes there, and I definitely use the same techniques when I'm developing dishes here or when I was at the Uptown in last summer on Lake George. And I guess I've come to, I think Ferran Adrià said, I'm going to misquote him, but said something like, the best sardine is better than a not very good lobster, which has definitely shaped my food philosophy, which is what I took from that to mean is an impeccable ingredient, regardless of what its stature is in the food world, is the best thing that you can possibly cook. And so I shouldn't think, well, I need to have beef because that's what people like, or I need to have chicken. If I go to the market and there's the most beautiful new potatoes that I've ever seen, that's going to make the best dish possible. And that's what I should be using, and that's what I should be focusing on.
What can we expect to see on the menu this spring and summer that you're stoked about?
Well, fava beans are one thing that I saw on my last trip to Mexico that I had no idea were even used there.
And yeah, that's crazy.
There are these really delicious fava bean tostadas that I'm excited about. I'm even more excited about it because unlike the French, they don't peel the inside, so it's going to be much easier to cook. I'm really, really excited for corn and tomato season and tomatillo season. So all of the stuff that we're already cooking now, it will be better. And corn, you know, corn is such an integral part of Mexican food, from esquites and grilled corn to like chili atole, chicken and corn soup. So that is great. I'm already getting some watercress from a friend of mine who's picking it, which is I get the first produce to come out of the ground around here, so that's kind of an exciting thing to put on the menu. So yeah, everything I can find. New potatoes again, I've got something on the back pocket for that.
Well, do you guys have a website? Yeah
I don't have the URL
well
offhand.
I believe it is, because I have a computer, I'm just gonna pull it up. I think it's granelectrica.com. Is that right?
That would make sense.
Yeah, that's it. It's granelectrica.com. You also have a Twitter, which is at granelectrica.
Mm-hmm.
And you're on Twitter as well. Whether or not you want to put that out there is up to you. But this weekend, if you're in the New York City area, head over to Gran Electrica, get some tacos, some tecate, put some salt and some lime in it. Trust me on that. And in general, just go check it out. Sam Richmond, immensely talented chef. And Sam, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
I'll see y'all next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information.
Thanks for listening.